Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio presents Holzer's Ghosts. Tonight, Holzer Files Season 2, Episode 9, I believe it is, The Ghost That Got Away, The Ghost of Westover Manor. We're going to talk about that this evening on the program, and I'll introduce my guests in just a few moments. This was a really interesting case because this is one of the rare cases Dr. Holzer heard about this ghost. It was very famous in the Virginia area, but when Dr. Holzer went knocking, this is one of the stories he went after actively. He talked to people around the area who kept pointing him to where this ghost story originated from. When he finally gets there, literally knocks on the door, he gets kind of rejected in a very polite manner. As you saw tonight, Andrea, who is the granddaughter of the woman that owned the home at the time, was very kind, but she just wasn't into allowing a paranormal investigation. That's not something she wanted to do. Plus, the strange idiosyncrasy of this investigation was that people that came to visit the manor had paranormal experiences, but the people that lived there never did. And that's really rare, right? Most haunted house stories you hear from the people who live there, from the people who are experiencing the haunting firsthand. What was the mystery of this house? Why would the people living there not have an experience, but everybody else did? And it was the property itself, the house, and the outlying surrounding area that would have many different paranormal experiences take place. So when we were told about this case, it was fascinating because, you know, again, people always ask, how do you choose which case files of Dr. Hans Holzer you're going to investigate? And as I've said, it just kind of comes down to what's available. You know, is the place still alive and standing, or is it burned to the ground or been torn down and a parking lot put up? So there's a lot of differences. And then going through some of these places, we'd contact them in first season and they were like, no, thanks. We don't want a TV show in here. Which we understand. A lot of TV shows have burned bridges in the past. So we understood the reticence and hesitation. But sometimes they would go back and watch episodes from season one and see that we showed respect for the paranormal and the history. And that's what was the key element of allowing us into some of these locations, including Westover Manor. So that's what we're here to talk about tonight. Now, I don't have any of the cast members. I don't have any of the family members. People were very busy. Things are going on. Shane is settling issues with his father's estate. Cindy, I think, I don't know, she's out camping in the middle of nowhere. So she's not able to get into this. And I thought, you know what would be fun? We've got all of these great followers and fans of Holzer Files. And I know a lot of you are constantly in chatting about it, tweeting about it, Facebooking about it, responding to the posts that we put up. And I thought it'd be cool if we just had a couple of super fans join. And we're going to do this again in a few weeks. So keep watching. Watch the posts on the Holzer Files fan pages and on my Darkness Radio and Dave Schrader pages on Facebook. And I might pick you. You never know. The next grouping could include you. Let's introduce our two guests for this evening. We've got Cindy Brown joining us. Cindy, welcome.
Hello, everybody.
All right. Cindy, where are you from?
I'm original from Germany. I was born and raised there, but live now in USA.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. Now let's grab our other guest for the evening, Keely Gustin, who's having some connectivity issues. But Keely, we're glad you're here for now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I apologize for that. I'm hoping it's all fixed now.
That's okay. We've got Cindy to back you up. If you fade out, Cindy's going, we're going to go right back to Cindy on this. Keely, where are you located?
I am in Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, very cool. We did a couple of excellent cases in Ohio this season.
You did.
With Franklin Castle and the Phantom Hand episode. So there was a lot of crazy paranormal activity, and maybe you'll have questions about that we can chat about later. We're here to talk about The Ghost That Got Away. This is season 2, episode 9. And I know that you both had interest and questions about this case. So I wanted to involve you throughout this, but kind of discussing, we did go to meet Andrea, the current owner, who was the caretaker of this house. She is very loving and respectful of this house, of the ghost stories. And although she has not had an experience herself, which I don't know that I believe, All right. A lot of times these homeowners are really, I think they're kind of afraid to admit that they've seen or heard something because they don't want people to mock them or think they're nuts. And it was really great because she had enough people around her that have had experiences. She could kind of put it off on other people. But there were times, and you know, when we do those interviews, we're there for an hour, hour and a half interviewing that person, and it could gets boiled down. But there were a few times I'd push buttons and I'd be like, so really you had no experiences? And she'd be like, no, nothing. And you could tell, oh, and I kept trying to zing that hook out to drag her back in. But she, you know, the family, maybe she was trying to maintain the family respect that nobody else in her family has had a paranormal experience. So she didn't want to be the first kid on the neighborhood to do that. But a lot of cool stories going on around this. And I know Keely, you had popped up. You said you had a lot of questions regarding this case and wanted to poke. Let's start off with you. What are some of the things that fascinated you and made you want to know more?
So you actually brought it up. I was really surprised and felt a little, first of all, I could listen to Andrea talk all day. She's very articulate. You can tell the love she has for the home. And it really made me feel happy that she was there and allowing you all to come in. But I really felt like maybe because of the family history, you know, the family's religious affiliations, whatever it is, I as an empath and a medium, I feel like you have to be open to certain things. And I think that Andrea might not realize how open she actually might be or the things that she's actually seen. Or if she has seen things, maybe she doesn't want to talk about them, you know, and that's completely fine too. But I think one of the things that really touched me about this case is the location and just how much history is surrounding the home, between Jamestown just being right down the street and the atrocities that happened there, both of impacting Native Americans and the settlers. I think that I guess my main question is it difficult, or did you find that this case was frustrating? I sort of sensed that in the episode because there were so many spirits potentially coming through. I mean, did it seem more frustrating than other cases where you have a considerable amount of active history surrounding the location you're investigating?
Now, you're a medium and an empath. So for you, it would be a lot more frustrating. For Cindy, it's a lot more frustrating. For Shane and I, we're insensitive doorknobs, so it doesn't bother me as much. I don't have to sift through all the history to try to lock in. I know what I know. I know when I talk to the historians and the experiencers what the stories are. So I've already got that basis. So to me, that's what we're focusing on. You know, we're not hearing about colonial ghosts running around on the property, even though right. There was a massacre and a third of the colonials were killed.
Yeah.
We're not hearing about Native American spirits and indigenous people spirits running around the property. So we don't really, that wasn't our main focus. Poor Cindy, though. You know, we have to pull the pin and throw her into this mess of layered history. So I remember when we were driving up, and it drives us crazy, I'm always like, don't talk. I want your initial reaction on camera. And we come pulling up, and Cindy's like, oh my God, there's so much bloodshed. And I'm picking up, I'm like, no. And our director's, no, don't speak. Don't talk. Get out of the car and talk. So that we run into that a lot, and she gets so overwhelmed that she can't just filter. You know, she's not TV. She's real. She does she does. She's great for TV, but she just wants to tell you what's going on immediately. And especially if she's getting freaked out driving up the driveway. And it's a long, long, long gravelly driveway. I can't even imagine what it's like to get through there in the winter. But she has to sift through that. So that was tough. But for us, it's not bad. We kind of knew. And then once she, you know, once you see me do those initial interviews, I sit down and they don't show this because it'd just be a recap of everything we just did. We sit down with Cindy and we catch her up to what the history is, what she got right from the baseline investigation, what still doesn't make sense to us, and what we're working on trying to locate. So she is constantly fine tuning so that she can get into the mindset of that moment that we're looking to communicate with. It's like, you know, reading Bible verses, there's cues. You have to get to that cue to find the part you're looking for so you can continue on with the investigation. And I think that's a lot more of what she had to deal with. And there was a lot to unpack because she was picking up on the Native Americans. She was picking up on the colonials. She was picking up on family members. But you could see, and it's distressing for her as well, especially when you get in where somebody has committed suicide and that there might have There might have been two suicides there. She's picking up on this violence, and she absorbs it. Sometimes her neck hurts, or her head will start splitting. And, you know, we just have to be cautious of those moments and respect that sometimes she needs to dip in and get out quick before she's overwhelmed by the amount of negativity that she's picking up on. Cindy, what stood out to you about this episode? What questions did you start off with?
It's, for me, the whole history of the building is so, since it's such a long history, it goes back to 1677. I mean, alone the ground that it was built on, with the massacre that was going on, alone the ground is probably such hotspot for paranormal activity. And then on top of building this and the history of this family, I think this whole combination of activity or what happens alone in this piece of ground is probably so, like, and this all added up to something so interesting and so fascinating. And also, yeah, probably the activity, you don't know what it comes from. Does it come from the ground on itself or from the building which the original family from this home actually added to this whole story? So at the end, you don't know when you investigate. And Dr. Holzer tried to investigate this location, but he unfortunately wasn't able to. But now you three digging in this whole subject is so interesting because you find out slowly what is the whole history of this whole combination of the ground and the building itself.
And there were elements. Here's a cool story that we couldn't tell. It's not that we couldn't, but it's like there's no room for every story, and it really played no part in the haunting. But this was a very prevalent family. This was a very well-respected and well-known family. And they were actually friends. And I'm trying to remember the specifics of it, so I apologize for getting a little bit of this wrong. But they were friends with Benedict Arnold, who, for people that are familiar, Benedict Arnold was considered a traitor and caused all kinds of problems. And there was some controversy surrounding him and certainly being friends with Benedict Arnold. So at one point, he respected and loved this family. He goes off on a bender, and he actually rides his horse in through that front door and up the stairs and starts chopping at the banister with his sword, acting like a complete loon, so that the family tosses him out, effectively making it seem like they've broken ties with Benedict Arnold. So he did this as kind of a, oh, shit, I've kind of messed up your life being friends with this, so let me act kooky and you guys get rid of me, and then everybody's going to say, oh, we don't have to worry about them being with Benedict Arnold anymore. You know, and Cindy, you probably know American history better than I do. You hear a lot of these stories and realize that, you know, I thought, oh, we came over from England and we were Americans and we built this country. And no, all these settlers came over from England and France and Denmark and everything. And they set up and they were still under the king's rule. And I really don't remember any of that from grade school. I remember none of the fact that I just remember we were landed on Plymouth Rock. Woohoo, Americans, let's have Thanksgiving. And that's the extent of what I recall. So to learn and realize that there were patriots and then there were colonialists, there were people that still were sympathizers to the crown and were doing that. And you had all these different pieces in motion and you never wanted to be on the wrong side of that coin when it flipped. So it was a very precarious position for a lot of these families, and especially the wealthy, because if they realized you were a sympathizer, they could just take you off your land, which happened in the conference house, happened in a couple other locations, and you'd lose everything. And you'd end up, you know, somewhere else far removed from this property. So it, just to know some of these different aspects of the stories was cool. But Cindy, you brought up the house, and that house was built in parts, right? So 1600s, it begins, and then they just slowly keep adding on to this beautiful monstrosity. And I wish they kept giving you that gorgeous overview of the front of the house, where you've got the gates and the little eagles. Beautiful. The backyard, even more beautiful. It's this gorgeous rolling hill that goes right down to the water, and it's unbelievable. But what we showed you a few times on the episode, people loved the episode we did at the Morris Jumel Mansion because there were spiders everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, my God.
In this one, you saw the spiders. The spiders were like the size of a quarter. They were huge, and they were everywhere.
Oh, my God.
So one of our funny moments for us, as we were getting ready to go out and film the scene where we go out to the monument to try to do that, you know, communication, and we got the woman's crying out voice. When we first were getting ready to go out there, one of our producers, they had set the lights out there, and he was coming around real quick to get to us, and all of a sudden we just hear this blood-curdling scream, and he throws himself to the ground, and he's rolling around, and we're like, what in God's name? He had run through trying to get out of shot real quick. He ran through, and there was a huge spider web filled with spiders between these two trees, and he just ran straight into it. So it was like straight out of Indiana Jones, and he's coated in spider web and spiders, and he's and like 6'2", and we call him Kramer because, you know, he comes into a room flailing. But after that, I kept calling him Kramer Squatch because the yell sounded like Bigfoot. He's flailing around, but the spiders were definitely there. Thankfully, we didn't have to deal with them. Poor Shane did when he hit the well, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Now, we had a chance to talk to different family members. E.D. Rambo, who is her cousin, came to talk to us about their experience. And if you haven't had a chance to watch the episode, folks, there's they're driving to the house, and it gets very foggy. And out of the mist, this kind of figure appears in front of the car. She slams on the brakes, and she's thinking she hallucinated this, but her brother saw the same figure, this kind of woman move past them into the fog. So that was really kind of freaky. That's what inspired Shane to do the experiment on our first night with the laser grid and the smoke machine, thinking if they could manipulate the fog, maybe we would get some kind of, you know, some kind of manifestation out of that. And unfortunately we didn't, but it worked well because it gives a specific haze, which allows the grid pattern to be seen. And what was crazy is as we're talking and we're waiting, you see up near the top of the stairs, you see the grid pattern just vanish for a second, like something walked in front of it and took away. That was our first crazy experience, you know, walking into the thing. Being a medium yourself, Keely, I've got to ask, do you ever get overwhelmed just walking into these locations when you go out places?
Yeah. Cindy and I've worked with Cindy, and I actually learned from Cindy, and work with on my skills with her. She seems to get a lot more of the physical things, like feeling the pain in the neck. You know, she often states that she's feeling really dizzy, feeling really overwhelmed. For me, it's incredibly emotional, and there's a lot of voices kind of happening in my head. So it's incredibly overwhelming. And I really appreciate the respect that you all give to Cindy and kind of keeping an eye out for her and making sure that, you know, she's on the up and up and that she's okay and can keep going. I think what was really predominant to me in this episode was the fact that the brother that kind of led to the downfall of everything with the gambling debts and his indiscretions would not give Cindy his name. And for Cindy, that's a big deal because she's usually on the spot with names. And that to me just really embodied his spirit of, well, everyone should know my name because I built the rest of this property up. So that really stuck out to me as a very clear communication of just how angry and put off he was by how he'd been treated in the history books.
Cindy, are you sensitive at all to spirits?
Yes, I am. I'm empathic. I had a psychic reading done, and I heard that I have some psychic abilities. Unfortunately, I know that I pick up a lot of energies, spiritual and still living, so which can be overwhelming. But yeah. When it comes to my psychic abilities, I want to do the workshop with Cindy. So I have that scheduled and see how it goes. Maybe I can make more out of it.
Cindy keeps telling me at location, she goes, Schrader, you're sensitive. You've got the gift. You just have to let it go. I go, don't keep encouraging me. I said, don't keep encouraging me or I'm going to start training people and taking away your jobs. And she, I said, I'll start wearing kimonos and red lipstick if that's going to get the attention.
And the earrings yeah. too. She's always got a great pair of earrings on.
Shane and I joked that for season three, we're going to both show up with matching kimonos and she'll have her kimono yes. on. And I don't think the producers will allow that, but I don't feel that I'm psychic or mediumistic yet. I have experiences and I hear voices and I've seen ghosts, but I don't know if that means because I'm mediumistic or because I'm inquiring and I put myself into that mode and with my intention to see or experience these beings. But I am, and I always hate to use this term because I feel like people are overusing an empath title nowadays. Mm-hmm. I feel empathic because I get overwhelmed by emotions and sensations. There was one episode in season one where, I can't remember the episode. I wish Cindy or Shane were here, but we had filmed the scene and we were waiting in the car to film the next scene. And we all began getting really agitated. And like, we start going after each other in the car and we're all mic'd up. So our producers are like, what the hell's going on? And we're just at each other. And then it was gone like that. And they were like, what caused that? I'm like, I don't know. You know, all of a sudden, all of us just got flustered, but here we are kind of kicking up dirt in this, I think it was a cemetery we were at one point. So maybe it was Oceanborn Mary or Whaley House, but we just really kind of got agitated by it. And later on, Cindy's like, I think we were being really influenced by the irritation of the spirits. And there are times that Shane and I will be in a place and we start to get crabby or kind of emotional or moody. And she'll tell me, D, you got to step out for a minute and recollect because you're getting influenced. You're allowing the spirit to have that effect on you. And so I'm working at shielding and getting that taken care of, but I can't even guess if I'm, you know, my spigot's open this much, hers is like this. So she's just a constant conduit. That's got to be driving her close to insane. So we've got Edie, the cousin who sees these things, Kelly Ludwig, who is a delightful guy, and we had a chance to talk with him and the kind of experiences he's having. Now, the pots and pans flying off the shelves, right? Footsteps, seeing an apparition of a woman walk through the room and just right through a wall. Well, that was the oldest part of the house. That would have been the house where Evelyn Bird would have lived. And they added that wall and stairwell when they added, so that would have been her walkway. So I actually, when I first kept hearing the footsteps out there, right, during the main investigation, I heard the footsteps out there. That's what drew me to that direction. But I actually did a scrying session with that mirror, and I was doing an EVP session thinking maybe she was using it as an elaborate doorway back and forth. But that's when we catch the shadow trackers in the other room. But I got to tell you, it was funny. As I watched it again tonight, and I go in there, my first inclination was I went in and I turned my back to the pots. And I'm sitting there going, oh, I forgot I did that. I'm wondering how many of the fans are watching this going, he's going to get hit in the head with a pot.
Yeah.
One of those pots has got his name on it. And you'll notice that as I'm standing there at first, I was doing that. And part of the reason was it always seemed to happen when nobody was looking directly at the pots. So I was trying to, you know, do what I was doing, but like that was secondary, hoping it would fling a pot off. And then I started to get that kind of feel. So that's why I turn around and I moved to the other side of the room. And what was great is we have our camera guy, Rob Toth, our director of photography, is out there filming me. And he keeps going, psst, psst. And I'm like, what? And he keeps pointing over his shoulder and I'm listening. And you could hear these footsteps padding around on the stairs. And I'm like, am I hearing, are you hearing footsteps? And he's like, yeah. Okay. So we're sitting there and then all of a sudden you could hear the pronounced noises. Like it was definitely letting us know something was there. So I don't know what the activity, you know, the violence, poltergeist activity of the pans flying might've been William Byrd III just trying to, again, make his presence known almost like a petulant child, which fits, you know, one of the old ideas that when we die, the majority of our personality goes somewhere else. What's left behind is kind of the garbage, the stuff you don't think heaven wants, right? We don't want a petty, rage-filled, jealous jerk, you know, in heaven, right? We deal with those behind the wheel of our cars every day. We don't want to deal with them in heaven too. So is what's left behind of William Byrd really just kind of the base animal of who he was, the angry, petty person. So throwing pots, banging, messing with the electricity, his lights would flicker and go on and off. He would have all kinds of different activity that was taking place. But what did you guys, and Keely, I'll start with you again on this. What did you make of the type of activity that was being recorded and talked about?
Yeah, I am always so impressed by the different types of equipment you use and the ways that you guys employ the equipment to really capture or find ways that the spirits in that specific location may best communicate by using the fog machine and the shadow tracker. I mean, that was tremendous. So I think the thing that really, really stuck out for me, not the shadow tracker. The shadow tracker is the lights, right? Along right. The bottom of the floor.
Yeah, okay. those three brick lights we
the
had.
The three bricks, all lit yeah.
Up. Yeah.
So when those, I mean, it clearly looked like someone was walking directly over it and almost like someone in a dress, someone with something trailing behind them, just like the apparitions or the spirits that people had claimed to have seen. That really got me. I mean, I rewound it and watched it a couple times because it was just so undeniably in a sort of, a walking pattern that really stuck out to me in this episode.
Yeah, when we had that happen, now we use those shadow trackers on a lot of episodes, but we don't get anything. We used it once this season where we caught that orb kind of shoot in, and we don't like orbs for the most part, but we see this orb shoot in and we hear footsteps. And as the orb passes over one of the shadow trackers, you see it light up, but it didn't affect all three. Mm-hmm. But in this episode, I mean, it was like blink, 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 blink. And it just lit them up in progression as though something was walking. It's funny because I have generally the same reaction every time. What the fuck was that? You know?
Yeah.
And our director goes, Dave, do you have any other words in your dictionary you can use? I'm like, okay, come back. And seriously, what the fuck was that? Right? No, Dave, you're missing the point. We don't always have to curse. I'm like, dude, you want my natural reaction. I want to know what the fuck was that? That lit up all three of those bricks individually. And as you saw, even when it's sitting there, if I'm sitting near it, it doesn't go off. I had to put my hand like an inch over it for it to light up. And we get that kind of natural progression of it walking through. That was bonkers to me.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't get our swirling ghosts that we've gotten recently or mists and shadows moving. But to me, that was pretty damn good. I like that piece of evidence. You know, I, of course, we'd all like to see Evelyn come striding through in her gown washing over. But, you know, that's still telling you that something is reading the energy there. Something of major energy is happening at that minute. So that was a pretty exciting segment for us. Cindy, watching the episodes up to this point in season two, I mean, how do you rank the evidence that we captured in this episode against what you've seen in the past?
I'm definitely one of the highest ones. I mean, like the shadow tracker seeing like lighting up all like in row, which is like, I mean, this is amazing. And I mean, you captured really great evidence, but the shadow trackers were really like something, I mean, to actually see it like it happened. I mean, yes, you have things going off then and there, that's true, but like really all connected, that's like in with the footsteps as well, hearing it and then seeing that with the shadow trackers, that's like a combination of evidence, which is like, I mean, I love it.
Oh, I do too. And I just love how these things have been playing out. The one thing that's standing out to me, and I haven't noticed it until really tonight's episode, how many of these locations, like within minutes of getting in it, we start hearing footsteps. Like almost, I got to guess, more than half of our episodes. And I didn't put it together literally till tonight. I'm like, man, it's like these spirits immediately want to be known and heard. They're there. And, you know, that takes us off our game. Now, I want to address one thing because I get a lot of questions. Well, sure, you're hearing footsteps. 2 minutes later, you're walking upstairs and you could see the cameraman shooting down. Actually, the cameramen aren't there. They're on the levels with us, and you see them in that one static shot of both of them there. What happens is after we're done with the investigation, they'll follow us around the house and do shots like that to get some, they call it B-roll, cutaway shots. So they're not up on the different floors. They're not where they were. They're there right in the room because we keep it one sound guy, who always stays off in the corner behind the door frame right there. And then the two camera guys, and that's it. That's all we allow in the house and on the property. We have PAs and security that keep everybody off of the immediacy of the property so that we can't, there's no chance we're going to have cross contamination of, you know, a PA or an exec moving from one room to another. There's none of that. And you'll see even Cindy, she did it in a few of the episodes in season one. We were so blown away. She's like, that's not real. That's got to be one of our guys. It's right. One of our people. And they're like, hold on. And radio, where is everybody? And we get a full call of where everybody is located outside. They're in their cars. They're here. They're there. No, Cindy, there's nobody there. So then we're like, okay. And you could see it in Cindy's face. And then she's like, let's go upstairs. Cause you see, she's got this kind of somebody's screwing with us. Let's go bust whatever moron's hiding under the bed. Right. And we get up there and there's nothing going on. We end up facing something else. So it, you know, she'll feel the energy as we get up there and it shifts, or, you know, then we start getting things on the SLS camera or other aspects. With that said, I want to do something real quick. Next week, on Holzer's Ghosts, I've got two special guests for certain joining us. I have got Mr. Scott Walter from America Unearthed, who will be with us because he appears in next week's episode. And we have a special guest investigator joining us next week on the program, which is pretty cool. I'll give you a little clue of who's joining us. Following in her father's footsteps, Alexandra Holzer will be with us at the investigation. Awesome. This site is, it was known as Mystery Hill. It's now known as America's Stonehenge, run by Dennis Stone and his family. And it's this ancient location that's really cool, fascinating history. Scott Walter, who's a fellow Minnesotan here, and I are buddies. And when we were going to shoot this episode, I'm like, dude, have you ever heard? And he goes, heard it. I've been up there like 20 times. I'm like, would you be interested in being a part of this episode? He's like, yeah, let's go, man. Ghosts are not my thing, he said, but I'm interested in going up there to take this and dig a little deep with you. You know, he was willing to go down the rabbit hole, and he showed up, and Dennis started telling him ghost stories, and I had a chance to talk to him about it. So here's another shout out. Scott and I, as I'm learning the history of the location. But this is the nice rare picture we got, the family picture. Cindy, myself, so Alexandra, and Shane. And we're hoping in season three at some point we'll be able to get Gabe out on one of these investigations too, so we'll have all five of us in one place. So they say we're too important to have us all together, because if somebody, you know, blows up the building, Holzer Files is gone. So if we keep Gabe out, he can continue the journey and put together a new team, I guess. I don't know the philosophy.
No pressure, Gabe.
Yeah, right. Let's take a quick peek at a clip from next week's show.
Would you please tell me the nature, origin, and period of the people who lived there?
They were so vicious that they sacrificed to their power or their great spirit.
This is as far as I want to go. This is as far as we're going to go? I swore when I went up there the last time, I would never go up there again.
Yeah, so I go up there with the Native American guy to the location, and he's like, no, this is as far as we need to go, man. And wait till you hear his story, and then I have to go up there later. He left me unnerved. When I've got a guy who's in tune to the nature, in tune to the spirits, and he encountered something really terrifying, especially to him, that really kind of set my hackles off. That whole place was very unsettling. There is a sacrificial table there, this stone sacrifice table with the blood grouts, like you saw in Indiana Jones. So as they would sacrifice things, the blood would pour through these cuts. It's crazy. And wait till you see this story. But Hans Holzer was really kind of affected by this place, because he wanted to know the history. He wanted to know what was there. But we bring Alex in for a really interesting reason, and we'll reveal that on next week's episode. We do have to take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more of the best in paranormal talk radio coming up in just a few moments. But I have a special message that I'd like to share with you all from my son, Minnesota firefighter Cliff Schrader.
Hey, everybody. My name is Cliff Schrader. My father is Dave Schrader from the Holzer Files. And I am a Minneapolis fireman for the city of Minneapolis, Minnesota. And for the last 7 years now, I believe, every year we've been taking part in the Polar Plunge for Special Olympics and raising money. And all of you, my father's listeners and friends of listeners and everybody have been the heart of our donors and the reason that we've been able to raise so much. And it is that time of year again. And I am taking the plunge on April 17th, which, you know, is good for me. Might be a little warmer out. But it's that time of year again to try to raise some money for a great cause at Special Olympics. And if you guys have any interest in donating, go ahead and email my father at dave@darknessradio.com. And then he'll be able to drop you a link for your secure donations to Polar Plunge. And my goal this year is $10,000. Last year we did great. We raised over $5,000. I'd like to double it this year. So if that's at all possible, if you guys could find it in your heart, you give a penny, a nickel, a quarter, $1 bill, $2 bill if you got them, even though they're super cool. I get it. Anything helps. And our goal is $10,000. And I appreciate all of you. You guys are truly the heart of this whole deal for me as far as raising money, and I couldn't do it without you. And all the money that we've gone to raise over the years has gone to just amazing athletes. So thank you again, and I look forward to working with you all this year. And I will make sure that we get a video up this year of us actually getting into the icy water. So I hope you all have a great year, and I just look forward to putting out that video of us jumping in the water. So thank you again, and I couldn't be more proud of you.
Welcome back to the show. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio presents Holzer's Ghosts, the ghost that got away, the haunting of Westover Manor. Remember, if you're interested in making a donation to help my son so we can raise awareness and money for the Special Olympics, email me, dave@darknessradio.com. I'll send a link out to you. You can make a donation and help out. The money goes to help the special athletes with their training, their uniforms, and their travel expenses. And last year we raised $5,000. We know this year's been a little different, but we've got a bigger, broader audience than we've ever had before. Before it was just Darkness Radio audience. Now we've got all the Holzer File fans out there as well. So we're counting on you to be a part of this and help us out if you possibly can. Tonight we've got our super fans joining us on the program as well. We've got Cindy Brown, we've got Keely Gustin. And we're talking about the newest episode of The Holzer Files. But ladies, if you don't mind, before we go much further, I do want to show one more crazy clip from next week's episode of The Holzer Files.
This very spot is referred to as the Serpentine Wall.
This is a very sacred space right here because I'm feeling the earth and the wind and the sun and the elements.
You need to have a deep respect on this land. But it's
talking to me, saying, get off this land.
We should not be here.
This is a warning. They don't like anybody here. Stop walking on this land. Get off this land. Leave now.
Season 2 of The Holzer Files continues February 27th. Ancient Evil, The Haunting of Mystery Hill, only on Discovery Plus. So make sure that you go subscribe and watch it. I do want to address something. A lot of people keep asking, Dave, we ordered season 2 on Amazon Prime, or we ordered season 2 on one of the other services, and now that you're only showing it on Discovery Plus, what do we do? Well, contact your provider. You should get a refund for that. But something to consider, a lot of you are spending $20 to $30 to subscribe to get that one season of our show. Whereas if you take that money, after our season runs, you could dump it into Discovery Plus, and you'll get a half year of Discovery Plus for the same cost you would have paid to just watch our series, and it'll give you all the shows that are available under the Discovery Plus banner. So you might want to try that, or you could just try the 7-day free trial and make sure you give that a shot. All right, ladies, let's get back into this. Mitch Bowman, the historian, talked to us about William Byrd III, kind of the black sheep of the family, who committed suicide after he had kind of given away the farm, literally selling and parceling it off bit by bit. Cindy picked up on that, you know, the horrible injury and the fact that he choked on his own blood. When you see something like that and you're watching Cindy, and I want you to be honest, as a fan of a paranormal show, when a medium's telling you this, do you get red flags going off? Do you think we've given her the information in advance? And don't worry, she's not listening right now, so you could be honest with me. But how does it affect you, Cindy, when you watch something like that?
I do believe she really picks up on some of those things because she has such a great, she makes such a tight connection or such a close connection to those spirits that they, I think they try to make themselves known through those things like joking or pain, certain pain she picks up. And that with choking on the blood, I think that is something, I believe it's real what she experienced.
Now, Keely, even though you are a medium yourself, how do you view mediums on TV?
You know, Cindy is a, she's a unique case, honestly, and working with her privately and watching her work in public, I know that when you say in every episode, you know, Cindy's asked to be kept in the dark about the details, that's actually what's happening. So I think it really lends itself to a sense of credibility as it relates to her specific mediumship in this show. You know, and I do believe, and I have had experiences where things like that manifest physically as far as, you know, sort of feeling what happened in a home or feeling what's happened to someone. So it absolutely, I think that it's 110% genuinely coming through to her.
Right. And in this episode specifically, the reason I asked you this question is because our file folder was empty. We had like two pages of notes from Hans of the ghost stories he'd heard, but he knew none of the actual history. He didn't know about the suicides. He didn't know about any of the other things that took place there. So when she's hitting on this, I'm just writing notes and I'm like, I'll have to talk to the historian. I'll have to talk to the owner. I'll have to talk to the people we're going to be interviewing to see if this matches up with anything that they're aware of. And we got that confirmation, which, you know, I love those moments in every episode. And she is on fire. Plus, I really do feel bad for her because she does have this, you know, stigma. People automatically assume she's a medium. She's faking it. She's one of the hardest working people on the show, because she's got to dig through all of this, decipher it. And, you know, she's like, oh man, sometimes I got to say the stupidest things because that's what spirit's giving to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when the spirit's showing you something that may see, you know, I'm getting a 7 foot tall bunny carrying a wine cooler, you know, she's embarrassed. She's like, are they just screwing with me? But she throws it out there and I'll keep it in my notes, right? I'll have my notes out and I'll be like, just out of curiosity, Keely, with the history you know of this, does this make any sense? A 7 foot bunny carrying a wine cooler. And she'd be like, oh my God, my grandfather died of a heart attack on this property. And he always played the Easter bunny. And he was carrying a wine cooler when he dropped dead of a heart attack on the property. And you're like, how did she know that? Nobody knew that until the moment that person told us the story. So I love it. It's good stuff. All right, let's get to our hero moment of this episode. I didn't get hit with a pan, so I'm happy about it. I didn't get knocked down a flight of stairs. Nothing bit me, scratched me, did anything mean. But for all of you haters out there whining and bitching about Shane and the fact that this guy, he's always running out of places, he's terrified, he's nervous, Nelly. He's not, he's human. He's the tie. But this week, let's celebrate hashtag Brave Shane, because I did not send Shane to the well this time. We brought it up. And I was thinking maybe I'll go to the well and I'll go down there and do what I got to do because, you know, the activities in the house, and I'll give Shane a place to go into. But when Shane's like, I think I should go down into the well, I'm like, yeah, you should. All right, baby Jessica, down the well you go, right? That was cool to watch, but I love the fact that he goes out there. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go down there and check because of this, that, and the other. And then he goes out there, opens the door, and he's like, oh, man, you're kidding me. Because then he realizes this dank, dirty hole and it's just like a rickety. You can notice it from the one angle. The ladder is missing rungs. He had to climb down that thing missing rungs on this ladder. And I'm not sure, but I think that's the original ladder from like 1670s.
Oh, my God.
It was so poorly made. It was crazy. But he gets down there. And what you guys don't know is on night vision, they were catching these spiders that were everywhere. Ooh. Down there. He looked at the ground. So he's the only one in the hole, and he's got the camera. Mm-hmm. And our sound guy has to stand outside in between the well house and the main house so that he can get our audio feeds, right? Because he's out there with that. And he's sitting out there, and this was kind of a cool story, a behind-the-scenes tale. When Shane started hearing the banging down there, Danny, our sound guy, could hear the banging. And he's like, what the hell is that, right? He was really unnerved by that moment and hearing what was taking place. But Brave Shane, I think this is the second or third week in a row, Brave Shane has stepped up. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
give some claps to Shane for making the move going down there. You know, it's funny. I don't think I've mentioned this before on any of the shows. I know my forte. My forte is I'm good at doing the interview. I'm good at talking to the people and getting from them information. So that's my strength. Cindy brings in the mediumistic strength, right? So I'm kind of walking in Hans Holzer's shadow. Cindy's walking in the shadow of the mediums that Hans worked with. Shane is really kind of tethering you, the audience, to the experience. He's the human element of this. He's not the robot DJ. He's not the medium. He's the human element. So when his reactions, they're very real. They're very him. And he's not he doesn't run around terrified all the time. But when you're alone in these places, you get unnerved. You've seen it happen to all of us. So let me remind all of the viewers out there that are like, oh, I would never jump. I remember, oh, bullshit.
Right.
That's yes, all I got to say. All right. So with that said, which place do you think is the worst I've sent Shane so far in the first season and a half of Holzer Files?
Ooh. When you guys were in the when he was under the train car.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad. That was pretty bad.
Well, honestly, look at him and look at me. I'm 6 foot, 6 foot one in boots. I'm not a tiny little fella. And not that I'm saying he's petite. He's petite. But he is much, he's fun size. So he can get in, and he's also, you know, almost 20 years younger than I am. So he can get around in those places and scramble out. I would hear something or see a shadow arm come through the wall. I would end up standing up, rupturing my head or breaking my knees trying to get out of that little hole. So, but you bring up a good point. I do want to address this again because I still have people watching season one and season two, the beginning of the season, and they watch that episode. And everybody wants to know why we didn't address the shadow that moved at the end of the train tunnel. And here was the problem. There's only so much time to tell a story. It was so quick and fleeting. We even tried slowing it down, but it moved so quick that it distorted. It didn't, when you're going frame by frame, it just looks like black and then it's not black. Mm-hmm. So the part that really was amazing to us was you see that arm reach out through the wall, and due to the fact that the family had seen a phantom hand, people had been grabbed down there. We thought that played, and that was a much more important part of the story. So when people are like, you guys missed, how did you possibly miss this? We don't miss all the things you think we miss, but they don't, you know, there's not enough meat on that bone to dig deeper because it was so quick. We don't talk about most orbs because, again, unless there's corroborating evidence, like the shadow trackers going off or EVP at the same time, we're in old, dusty, musty places with bugs, dust, moisture. So we're going to get a lot of false positives. So we can't tell you it's a spirit. And even Cindy's like, nah, that's nothing. Move on. So when our medium's telling us she doesn't think that's a ghost, we're just going to go on with it from there. We'll leave the orbs to all the other shows that like them and want to deal with them. I told them from the beginning, guys, I don't want to present orbs. You know, can we just not, if we have orbs, I only want to talk about it if it's got a cool deal. And to the production team's credit, they're all like, yeah, we hate orbs too. Let's do that. Just talk about what makes sense to you. And they've been great about working with us on that. All right. Cindy, which place do you think is the worst that I've sent Shane so far?
I think the wealth at the Westover Manor was pretty, I mean, it was maybe not, okay, what was for us visible, not a lot of spiders. But
right.
I think this wealth in general, dark, kind of creepy feeling down there, like, you know, it looked for us. I mean, I can imagine how Shane felt like being in there and hearing all those knocks and those, I think that's pretty.
See, intense. I'm still the house that we went to, the Forever Home episode, where the families all feel drawn back to that house. In that basement where he got shoved out of that room and ends up splitting his elbow open. That, to me, I felt a lot of guilt about that one. Not enough that I won't do it again, but I felt some guilt over that one because he came out bloody. And my guilt went away when in the next episode my back gets split open because something charges up at me in the stairwell. So you know, being the big brother in this deal, I always feel like I'll quit your whining. You got a scratch on your elbow. I got a scar for life on my back, Shane. And he's always good about it. He laughs. But yeah, Shane's the only one down there. He's using a handheld camera. So I want people to know that. The angry male being forgotten. What do you think of that? I mean, the concept that you've got this male spirit that's there because of suicide, the plot of Graves, that's the family gravesite, it was consecrated earth. The theory is he's buried there without a marker, but the history is he's buried off of that property. He's like buried alone under a tree somewhere. So where do we put the marker? We have no idea. What do you think, Cindy? Do you think just placing a marker and remembering his story and telling his story like we did, will that be enough, do you think, to appease the spirits?
I personally don't think so, because he's
what we do, Cindy. That's what we found. We believe it. You're wrong. You're out of here.
I personally think since he tried so hard to make his presence known when you guys were there, I don't think just marking his name somewhere and, you know, showing, okay, he's buried there, or his body's buried there, his soul is still in Westover Manor. I think since he tried so hard to make his presence known, I don't think just marking his name somewhere will put him at peace. I think he wants to be known.
Do one of you have a train running through your living room right now?
I don't think so.
I'm hearing this like...
Oh, well, that's terrifying.
Yeah, I think it's you, Keely. Like... The spirit behind you. What do you think, Keely, being a medium as well? What do you think? What's the best way to appease an angry spirit?
I think
besides sacrificing Shane in a well.
Right. Yes, which I'm thankful we didn't do. I think, yeah, that would have been a really big first step.
That's season three stuff.
Right. I think the marker is a great first step. I think conversations like this are important too, and to have those in the household. You know, I personally, what I get from this, I do believe, based on the evidence personally, that Evelyn did commit suicide, and that the family had so much shame for William III, you know, and the things that he had done, that maybe they did cover that up, but then, you know, she still committed this same, you know, sin in the sense of things, but she is remembered and she is acknowledged. So having conversations in the home that do acknowledge all the work that he did, and making sure that his history is brought to light, I think is the second step to really kind of settling his spirit. And maybe he can just pass through quietly instead of tossing around pots and pans to people.
I feel bad because, again, I don't have my notes from that episode. I left them with the production, but, there was actually a story. Evelyn and her best friend had promised that if one died before the other, they would make their presence known. And I can't remember, but I can't remember if the friend died first and made her presence known to Evelyn, or if Evelyn died and did make her presence known to the friend. But there was communication after death between Evelyn and her friend. And that was a pretty cool story. It didn't play into our story, but it was kind of cool that there was some kind of attention that was going on there. I know we've got audience members that are wanting to be a part of this as well. So let me jump in here. If we have any questions, you can feel free to throw up a question. Here's an interesting one. Lena says, maybe you should bring in a cadaver dog and try to find out where he's buried. The only problem, I think, Lena, is because there were so many massacres there over the years, so many colonials, that back then they would just dig a hole and bury you. I don't know that we would find his grave per se, you know, and not just a Native American grave or one of the fallen colonials that might have been put there, because some of them were there just camping on the property. That was like kind of their base for a while. It was close to the water. So I'm not sure what we would actually find. But cadaver dogs, there are episodes that I've wanted to use a cadaver dog, and I'm hoping in season three that if we get into one of these places where they believe there's a something buried on site, I would love to bring in a cadaver dog and an excavator. But right now we've got a very small budget, being only in season two, so it would have to be Shane and I out there with a couple of garden shears and spades digging up the garden to try to find the bodies. Let's see here. We have another question from Libby. What is your mindset when you begin an investigation? Do you all go in expecting activity or expecting to debunk it all? Great question, Libby. I set the intention to make communication. I set the intention to go in and try to find the answers to appease these spirits. And again, a lot of times they don't show it, but when we go in, I'll say, hey, you know, this is my team, Cindy, Shane, I'm Dave. Please make yourself known. And if you have a story that you want us to tell, we will share this with the world. And I try to make that apparent and true. And I think that's sometimes why they feel better about it. Cindy's open and loving. We all go in with this open heart to make communication and see what can happen. But, you know, again, we're there for 5, 6, 7 hours investigating, and you guys get to see 15 minutes of it truncated, you know, and that's really only when there's something happening or not. So it's kind of hard, but I go into debunk as well. There are times that, and we don't show it because we don't show what happened that made us debunk it. But if we hear a bang, bang, and we go look and outside there's a tree branch, okay, that scene doesn't even make the episode because there's enough real stuff that we need to go in. We're trying to avoid the horror movie cat jumping out of the closet at you, you know, making you think there's something there. We try to avoid that as much as we possibly can. While I'm waiting for more questions from the peanut gallery here, Cindy, do you have any questions for me regarding the Holzer Files, any of the episodes, or this one that you'd like to address?
I find it great that you reinvestigated Dr. Holzer's files. Yeah, like I asked before the question, if there are some cases in Europe, because me being from Germany and he's from Austria, he was born in Austria, then moved to New York. So I was wondering if you guys down, like, of course, this COVID situation right now, unfortunately, puts everything on hold, but...
Right. Yes, we hope to. Season 3, season 4, if we get them, we're hoping to make it over to Europe. You know, I think it's funny that Hans Holzer, America's first great paranormal investigator, but he's from Austria. He's Austrian, not really American, but he lived here and was working here, so... that's a big part of it. Yeah, we're hoping to get over there. He did a lot of cases overseas, and I go do trips once a year overseas with our listeners of Darkness Radio. And we do a lot of live events. So we've been to Romania, Scotland, Germany, France, Prague. Australia, we've been to some cool places, and you know, we were going to do Scotland in 2020. That got put off to 2021. Oh, wow. We're pushing it to 2022 because you have to fly in and then quarantine for 14 days before we could even start our trip. So a lot of people can't afford a month off to go to Europe to do that. So hopefully for the Holzer Files, we'll find 2 or 3 locations that we can go so we can ship out there, quarantine for 14 days, and then just film 3 back-to-back episodes while we're out in Europe. But that's hopefully if we get that opportunity. Keely, you have a question from the Peanut Gallery. PJ Jones says, Keely, when watching, do you pick up empathetically stuff before it's mentioned?
Wow. Sometimes, you know, that's a hard question because I think I can feed a little bit off of Cindy because I'm watching her and I'm sort of in tune. But sometimes there really is this sort of we're both kind of feeding into the messages she's getting. So particularly in this episode, it resonated with me that the woman that the man wasn't giving his name and that Evelyn, you know, was sort of wandering through the halls and we didn't have a specific cause of death. I found myself really knowing the names of the spirits and knowing that confidently that it was the brother and Evelyn before you guys kind of announced it later in the show. But so I think maybe a little bit, but Cindy is so engaging that sometimes I think I'm just feeding into what she's feeling because watching her work is truly just it's fascinating.
Lori Torres asked as well, question for Keely, do you ever get readings from watching the episodes? Oh. So we got that answer. Into the Dark, is this the first time that the shadow blocks worked? Were you skeptical of the device prior to episode 9? No, we caught it in one of the earlier episodes this season, and I can't remember the name of the house. But we had them laid out in a room, and we caught audible footsteps, and then you see this orb come out and fly over the brick, and one of them lights up as the orb goes over it and then vanishes. So that to us was a cool piece of evidence. But this was the first time, yes, I saw all three engage and light up. So that was pretty cool. Let's see here. Shadow blocks. I know we've got some more. I'm trying to scroll through here. Oh, that's nice. Big Poppy Ed says, guys, thumbs up. Show support for Dave Schrader and the show. Shout out to Tim. Been 10 years strong with y'all. Well, thank you for listening to Darkness Radio for 10 years. If all of you are new to this and only found us because of this live video stream, I'm Dave Schrader, the host of Darkness Radio, along with my co-host, producer Tim Dennis, who has better things to do on Thursday nights, since we're only talking Holzer files. He's at home, and we'll edit all of this tonight and put it up for the podcast tomorrow. But yeah, 15 years on the air with Darkness Radio now, exploring the strange and supernatural. So thank you, Big Poppy Ed, for joining us and being a part of the program and listening. What's this question we have here? Joanne says, do you ever, or does Cindy ever try to cross over any of the spirits that you think need help crossing over? No, we've taken mason jars to collect all the spirits, and I just have a whole shelf full of them at home. I do prayers at every location. These prayers where I'm trying to help clear the spirits and let them go. Cindy is kind of the mind. She doesn't know if we can really clear them, but you know, I figure what's the harm in the intention, but I always do. I face it off and at the end, to myself and to the home, I always ask that any of the souls that are lost be sent home. Any of the souls that are there and confused, we send forward family and friends, and, you know, just kind of baptize the building in the blood of Christ. Again, being Christian, that's all I've got, to go in and help seal this place and keep it safe for the people that are still living there and residing there. Dave, have you ever gotten a feeling of, oh, hell, no, not going in there? Yes, but I got married anyway. No, I'm just kidding. There's times here's an interesting story. I was at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. I was hosting an event 13 years ago, and down in the basement of the concert hall, there is this room called the Electric Room, and there's a lot of weird ghosty stuff, and a homeless woman died in there, I believe froze to death. So there's some really kind of sad and chilling ghost stories about the place. And one day I was running an event, and I just introduced some of the speakers, and they were up on the stage, and I came around the back, and I was going to go down the stairs and come around to go out in front and watch. And as I come jogging past down through this corridor, I don't know how else to explain this, but there was like darkness spilling out of that room. And it was a dark area, but I was like, that doesn't look right. That's not just, the darkness should be contained. It shouldn't be coming out of a room. And I kind of got there and I stopped and I'm like, no. And I took the long way back and had to sneak up back on stage and crouch and get off stage that way and go around. But I that freaked me out. And we'd had experiences in there. Our very first event, I was there with Jason and Grant from Ghost Hunters, and they had done an investigation in their little seance, and nothing happened. And we all stepped out in the hall, and as we're talking, we hear wham, and we open up the door, and they had those like lunch tables from grade school lined up against the wall, and then stacks of chairs in front of those. Well, one of the tables had somehow come up over the tops of the chairs and slammed into the middle of the floor. So we had that experience. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. Weird place. I love the Stanley Hotel for that reason, but that was one of the only times I said, oh, no. And I, at Waverly Hills, they wanted to put me in one of the morgue drawers, and I had such a fear of death. I'm like, I'm not going to tempt the fates. Let's just leave that for the cadavers or Zach and Nick. I'm not going to climb in there. Dave, how often do you have an emotional reaction when arriving? I don't. I usually don't pick up on any. You know, I might feel like, ooh, there's kind of a thickness, but I don't ever feel emotional. I got emotional during the Franklin Castle episode just because of the story and the reveal of the little girl who passed away from diabetes. And my daughter, almost 1 year, 2 years to the date, had almost died from the same ailment. And that broke my heart. So that was very emotional. And then to make connection with her. So, is somebody tap dancing at one of your homes now? We heard a train earlier.
I don't know.
Are you hearing that, Keely?
No, I can't hear anything. I can't hear
Cindy,
that.
You're not hearing that?
No.
Are the listeners hearing that? Am I hallucinating? I'm hearing, sounds like somebody's doing a soft shoe in the background while we're talking. Mm-mm. Okay. Let's see. We've got another quick question here. A statement. Sherry says, I binged the first season and really enjoyed the Whaley House episode. When y'all went to El Campo Santo Cemetery, you were not able to find Yankee Jim's grave. It was unmarked. I visited with a couple of weeks ago and there was a marker for him. Was his, and that's where the question ends. I don't know how to answer that, but we didn't see a marker for Yankee Jim at that time, if that was your question. Yes, people are hearing it. Okay, good. So I'm not hallucinating. The old man.
Maybe I'm hallucinating. I don't know.
Yeah. Trisha Bourne says, yep, I've been hearing it for a while. Well, ladies, any other questions? Cindy, any questions for me before we wrap up this evening? I know I've kept you a little over our hour timeline, but any other questions you have for me or the cast and crew?
You guys do a great job, and
thank you.
I just started watching House of Files, so I just tapped into the show end of last year, and I was like very hooked from the first moment on. So yeah, thank you for what you guys do, and keep up the great work. I mean,
that's right. You were easy to pick as a super fan. I've been watching you post and repost and like post and share and everything. So you've been great. That's why I was like, oh, Cindy deserves this. Let's bring her on and have a little fun tonight.
Thank you.
Cindy Brown, thank you. Keely, any last questions or comments you have?
I really appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I cannot wait to see what the future episodes hold. I think my one question, just quickly, what episode that's aired so far, because I don't want you to like spoil anything, do you feel that you've most fulfilled Hans Holzer's intentions on? Is there a specific case that you've investigated that you really feel like Hans Holzer would be proud or really thrilled with how you're carrying on his legacy and what in the evidence that you found?
I feel pretty proud of each one that we're doing that. We're trying to follow in his
certainly,
footsteps.
Yes.
But I think the Oceanborn Mary case from season one, because it was such a complicated case with moving parts, I think he would be extremely happy to know we found the truth. They wanted him to sign off on that house as being the haunted house, and he and the medium couldn't corroborate that. He knew there was something, and in your handwritten notes, he's like, there's something off, and he wouldn't give it the official Hans Holzer stamp of approval. And I was really impressed by that. And then we go in and we find out why, because that house wasn't her house. It was her son's house, who she visited a few times. Her house burned to the ground, and her childhood home, the one that she really loved being in, had been moved brick by brick over to another location, and that's the one we end up visiting. So I think getting to that end of the story was one of the best feelings for me, that we, you know, hopefully we did proud for Dr. Holzer. I do want to point out, everybody's like, he's so calm. How come he's so calm? You guys are so jumpy. Well, Hans Holzer didn't go in at night in the dark by himself half the time. He was always with a medium and let them do the work in broad daylight. So I don't know what Hans Holzer would have been like at night, but he admitted there were times he was frightened out of places. And we've talked about a couple of them this season, of places that he left because he was not having it. He didn't like what was going on there. So we're just going to keep doing what we can to bring the love and hopefully get people to go along with us and have fun, just like we've been doing. So it's been a lot of fun. We'll give one more quick little video before we head out, and we'll say our final goodbyes in just a second here. But let's all check this out.
Exclusively on Discovery Plus.
A lot of shadow figures are seen here.
This may be the only chance we've got to reopen this file.
This goes back to Hans's first investigation 50 years ago. Now there's a new wave of hauntings here.
There are so many spirits in this place.
Definitely hearing something.
He's yelling at me, find my body, find my body.
Look at that. Yeah.
The Holzer Files, new season, exclusively on Discovery Plus, the streaming home of paranormal.
That is cool. Little snippets of upcoming episodes. The Queen Mary is coming up later on this season. We've got Mystery Hill next week. The America's Stonehenge that'll be out next week. Again, we have season 2, episode 10, I think it is, the Haunting of Mystery Hill, only on Discovery Plus. So we're going to be doing that one. Scott Walter, our special guest next week on Holzer's Ghosts, along with Alexandra Holzer, to talk about that. And I think Dennis Stone might join us as well, the owner of America's Stonehenge, to talk to us about some of the different capacities. And we'll get your questions in for that as well. Cindy Brown, super fan. Keely Gustin, super fan. Thank you both for tuning in, watching, and supporting the show and spreading the word on social media. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Very congenial. I like that. Next, I'll tell you what, in a couple of weeks, folks, we're going to do this again. I will bring in super fans and have you be a part of the program. So keep watching my posts, and you may be selected to join me here on a special episode of Darkness Radio Presents Holzer's Ghosts. Have a safe and happy weekend. Remember to watch the brand new episode this Saturday on Discovery Plus. We'll be back again next week with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Darkness Radio.